Welcome to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols, joined by our resident coach, Mr. David Fizdale, and our NBA insider, Dave McMenamin, popping up from Venice Beach. I mean, I guess he's got the best location of all of us, Fiz. We're all making mistakes here, except for Dave. Coming up, Kevin Durant played in an NBA game for the first time in a year and a half, and boy, did he look good. We will discuss his outlook for the season. First, though, let's start with his teammate, Kyrie Irving, who just moments ago, friends, spoke to the media for the first time. You will recall he was fined last week for failing to do his media obligations, which are, as I mentioned, in the CBA contract the players sign, when he said, "I do not talk to pawns." Apparently that has changed. Listen to Kyrie today.
Well, like I said, the focus is on what's going on in the task here, you know, my job. And I wanted to make sure that that was clear. There are no distractions. Nothing about dispelling anything, nothing about going back and forth, nothing about calling out one person or another, not even refer to you guys as pawns, you know what I mean, or media. It's just really how I felt about the mistreatment of certain artists when we get to a certain platform, of when we make decisions within our lives to have full control and ownership. You know, we go through the rigorous season, we do everything we're asked to do, you know, and we want to perform in a secure and protected space. And if I can't have my voice protected on this platform where I offer myself and my art, just inviting everyone to it because this is what I've been blessed to do. And then you got a two-time MVP coaching you, man. I'm like, you know, I think I got to take back my comments in terms of head coach back a few months ago. But it's just like, man, we have such a great synergy. Everyone feels like we're coaching one another to be better. So I'm grateful for that.
Coach Fizz, what's your reaction when you see him there?
Well, that's the right thing to say, obviously, to clarify. But at the end of the day, the media is just part of the deal. And especially in New York City, get used to it. I've lived it. And for the most part in New York, you have really big-time sports journalists. But you do have those writers who are sensationalists and want to poke at you and kind of tabloid it. And so I see how that can get annoying to a player at times. But you just got to kind of prepare yourself that that's what it's going to be. They're going to always be trying to pull at your threads, always trying to pull at your culture, especially in a big media market like that. And you're just going to have to find a common ground and a good level of respect to walk that line with them.
Dave?
Well, speaking as someone who covered him day in, day out for 3 years and didn't really feel like I had a different advanced relationship with him at the end of those 3 years than I did on day one, all I ask as someone, as a speaking on behalf of the media corps, an advocate for the job we do, is just fulfill your obligations. Don't have to be friends with us, but speak to us after games, because if ultimately what you seek is understanding for the art that you are putting out there, the best way we can understand it is if we hear it directly from you. Because otherwise, we got to talk to other people who can interpret what you're doing and then put those quotes and that information in our stories versus getting it straight from the source. And so today, I hope, was an olive branch, because listen, the Nets are going to be one of the most fascinating teams all season long. Yes. Kyrie's one of the most fascinating characters in that group. So let's hear it directly from the horse's mouth.
It's interesting to me watching him speak just now. The best advocate for Kyrie Irving is Kyrie Irving.
Absolutely.
He is telegenic. He is charming. He is smart. When he wants to have a real conversation, he is winning in every kind of way. And he could be his own advocate in so many ways with the people that he feels are causing him distractions or taking away from him. He could actually be helpful in changing that. It's when he does the big Instagram sort of, you know,
broadcast
treatises that I think allows people to sort of read into it, to Dave's point. I was also interested to hear him make his comment about Steve Nash saying, "Oh, I got to take back what I said a few months ago." That was, of course, in reference to the podcast that he and Kevin Durant did together, where he said, "Oh, one day he's going to be the coach. One day I'm going to be the coach. We're all going to be coaches." And it's funny, in the moment, again, some people said, that's not a great thing to set up your new coach, Steve Nash, legendary Steve Nash, with. And he was upset that people were, quote, taking it out of context, or why do I live in this media world and all of that. Well, today he said himself, "I got to take back what I said."
Right.
So clearly he knows now that was not the right thing to say.
Yeah, and I just think that he's going to learn fast. They're going to have to put a nice little bubble over their team. Same thing we did in Miami. you know, don't say too much. You just give them enough. You don't let them in your locker room from the standpoint of information. Because mm-hmm. the biggest issue they're going to have this year are people trying to tear them apart from the outside. Mm-hmm. That team's got great, you can see the relationships are there. Steve Nash is the kind of guy that's a team builder. So they do have to be aware of what can tear them apart outside. But you need to understand you have to deal with the media. And you can use the media to your advantage if you, you know, approach it with the proper level of respect.
The media is a conduit to the fans.
No doubt.
That's just how it is. That's
yes.
why that is part of the collective bargaining agreement. Kevin Durant returning to action last night. Man, let's get back Ooh. To the court because this was so great. First time since tearing his Achilles in game 5 of the 2019 finals. 15 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 blocks, 24 minutes of action. But most of all, right. Coach, he just looked like himself.
Having fun. It looks great with having one of our superstars back on
yeah.
the court. It makes the league exciting and interesting. And the things I looked for were, how many times did he shoot inside the restricted area? 2 for 3 inside the paint. He was 5 for 6 from the free throw line, which means he is attacking, that he's putting pressure on that leg to do the things that it's always done for him. And over the time that he plays this year, as his minutes grow, he'll get stronger. And I think playing next to a guy like Kyrie, who can really get him some easy buckets, is just gonna allow him to progress at his own pace.
Fizz, I love seeing KD play above the rim. 17 months after playing his last game in the finals, to be out there on the court and to show that that level of elasticity is back in that leg of his and obviously have the confidence to go for plays like that shows me that he's progressed to a really strong level entering this season. And we've looked at guys in the past who've had the Achilles tear. Basically no one that I can recall that was at his type of level returned to that type of level. So he's trying to accomplish something that's unprecedented here. But certainly, like, I think part of the reason Kevin Durant hasn't had the best relationship with the fans and with the media is that maybe he hasn't gotten his proper due as being one of the greatest players of all time, and certainly one of the greatest of his generation. And I think perhaps, you know, this could be a reminder to everyone of just how great of a basketball player he is if he can stay healthy on the court this year.
I mean, look, we haven't seen a guy with his body type in his prime of that skill level right. have this kind of injury. So he could really be rewriting the book on what an Achilles injury can and can't do to you. And the chemistry he had with Kyrie on the court
yes.
was remarkable. And you could see it in every moment. And them together, the way they complement each other, gave you hope if you're a Nets fan that this is really, really going to be something. Mm-hmm. And that chemistry, by the way, also apparent not just in the game. Kev and Kyrie had a very entertaining Instagram live chat on Saturday. One of the most fun exchanges involved Kyrie asking for more post touches. Take a listen.
In my past life, like I said, I was you. I was you. I was you. What you are now, that's what I'm up here. Same mentality. I'm getting to a spot. I'm raising up. I'm getting to a bucket. My footwork is impeccable. I have length. I'm able to shoot over top, hold the follow through, and I don't see people. I do you not feel the same way?
I do sometimes, but I'm just saying I don't think that's good for the continuity of our offense if our point guard always want to be underneath the rim. You know what I'm saying?
You know what? That can come off. That can come off.
You get what I mean?
I do. You're right. That can come off like I'm trying to implement myself. Just okay. So what about? Yeah. So what about 7 post-ups instead of 8?
I mean, we negotiated. I think I thought we was going to do 2.5 post-ups a game. The half one is like I throw you the ball in the post and you just throw it right back out to me.
No, but I'm also saying I feel like every play down I have a mismatch, no matter who's in front of me. So I think that mentality mixed with having that post guard is a great balance, you know, for our squad, for our offense.
Yeah, we're going to see, though.
I know my post-ups are negotiable, but I think 4.5 works, like 8. What?
We'll see.
Dave, do I hear 5? Do I hear 6? Where are we going here? 3? What did you feel like watching these guys do this in real time?
Well, I mean, to see them hash things out over an Instagram Live shows us that, wow, we are in a different era of NBA basketball. And okay, that's okay. Like, this is like the lunch table type of conversation, and you don't have to take it to be so literal that they're going to be rewriting the playbook and handing it to Steve Nash before the first game of the regular season. But I think it's also interesting to know that, you know, he's one of the best improvisational players we've seen in the game. And he wants to map out how he goes about his offense, which, you know, could be that he's on such a high level that he can think that many plays ahead, or it could be this is just two guys having fun talking about the game.
I think it's two guys having fun, but Kyrie is a great post-up guard. Mm-hmm. He doesn't get enough credit for that, but I love KD's response to him. It was so coach-like. I don't think that's best for our team right now. And so, you know, talking about floor balance and things like that. So I love that cover from KD, but you're talking about, this is a better, on paper, they fit better than LeBron and Kyrie, mm-hmm. right? Because LeBron needs that ball in his hands a lot. He's a guy, he's a playmaker, a guy like that. Both of those guys were like that. But now you put KD with them, who in his whole career has been one of the most efficient players when it comes to getting buckets. One, two, three dribble max to get wherever he wants to get a bucket. With Kyrie being that showman who can put it on the floor, do anything with the ball, I think they got so many options to play off of each other. And again, I think this helps KD get himself going again, get his legs back underneath him, and not feel the pressure to have to come out and be old KD right away.
Plus, by the way, it was the return of Kevin Durant last night, and that was amazing. We haven't seen Kyrie Irving hoop in a while either because of various injuries in the bubble and
the
everything
show.
Else. That man around a basket.
He's a show.
I'm sorry. I know the handles are all out of control and all that stuff, but just the way he moves around the hoop, it's so nice to have that back in the NBA. All right, coming up, guys, James Harden still wants out of Houston despite the addition of John Wall and how good those guys looked on the court the other night. Is there anything the Rockets can do to change his mind? We'll discuss that. Welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols, joined by Coach David Fizdale, Dave McMenamin. Let's get, guys, to the ongoing James Harden saga. According to Ramona Shelburne and Adrian Wojnarowski, James is still seeking a trade. Sources tell them John Wall's arrival has left Harden unmoved and uninterested in pursuing a new partnership, and the franchise star continues to push the Rockets for a deal. So let's look at a recent timeline of the drama here. December 1st, Harden did not report to Rockets training camp. A couple days later, he posted pictures at rapper Lil Baby's birthday party, breaking the NBA's COVID protocol by being without a mask. Then hopping to Las Vegas on the day the Rockets expected him to come in for his first workout. On December 8th, Harden finally did report to Rockets training camp. He had to, of course, enter the COVID protocol, so he was required to get 6 straight negative tests. Today, he is expected to finally clear that, rejoin the team. Here is Coach Steven Silas today.
We talk basketball. You know, I'm a basketball coach, and he's a basketball player, and we talked hoop today. So as far as his commitment to what we're doing basketball-wise, he was right there. As far as the rumors and all the other stuff I can't speak to, again, that's another question that you'll have to have for him. As far as a distraction, really hasn't been that much of a distraction. I mean, it's been something that the media has been talking about quite a bit, and I've had to answer a lot of questions about. But as far as our growth and our kind of pushing forward this season, we've kind of been right on pace, and now adding him and PJ to the mix just makes it better. So I see it as a positive.
So, Coach, we've been talking all week about Steven Silas's professionalism here.
Awesome.
It is a lot for a first-time coach to be juggling. Mm. But there's more ahead for him because ownership and the front office want James to be convinced to stay. So is there anything Coach Silas can do to help with that?
Well, I think he's handling it perfectly. Mm-hmm. Like, he's keeping it about basketball. He has nothing to do with contracts and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. So he's doing the right thing by you know, really presenting to James how the team can really succeed. Mm-hmm. The only thing I think that can keep James there is if he joins the team right now and plays with them and he likes what's going on.
Right.
If he really, really likes the locker room, the coaching staff, and the progression of where they're going to end up. Otherwise, damn, they offered him $103 million for 2 years, and that didn't convince him to stay over $50 million a year. I mean, so if that doesn't do it,
right?
I don't know what other options they have left. So, you know, hopefully the team can galvanize around him, but $103 million over 2 years, if that don't move you, I don't know what will.
Well, I don't blame James Harden for being in the position he's in. They got rid of Mike D'Antoni. They got rid of Daryl Morey. They traded away Robert Covington. And all of a sudden, this championship window that he was reveling in for a couple of seasons seemingly has closed. And now he wears that MVP trophy that he won like an anvil around his neck. Because we know that for better or for worse, in this league, it's about the ring. And unless you are winning championships, all your individual accolades ring hollow. And so certainly he must feel that pressure of we need to legitimize what I've done so far individually with a championship. And if I have a friend playing in Brooklyn and I see an easy window to potentially join up on a team that can get me that ring, there's desire there. But now it comes down to if that's not going to happen and the Rockets have dug their feet in, you got to be professional because you're getting paid quite handsomely to go play basketball. And you are great at playing basketball. And so report to camp. It sounds like he had a good practice today. And certainly kudos to Steven Silas because what a tough situation that he's put in as a first-time head coach. I'm sure it is a distraction. He hasn't been able to implement what he wanted to do in his first week of training camp as a head coach. But to air out those grievances is not going to help him in the long run should they be able to mend fences and have him and James Harden continuing their partnership together.
It really is tricky from a basketball standpoint, though, because one of the things that we all said coming into this training camp, once we knew John Wall and DeMarcus Cousins were going to be there, is, wow, if James changes the way he plays, this could really work. If John Wall is really healthy and James adjusts, well, now they're in the position. He is finally coming into camp and practices with them.
Right.
But they're trying to convince him to feel good about this team. I don't know how much then Coach Silas can tell him, by the way, also completely change your style of play because I don't want this team built around you anymore. And if you look at the other guys now, John Wall and DeMarcus Cousins, the way they've been playing, they have looked good in preseason action. Wall posted 13 points, 9 assists, followed by 21 points, 4 assists. Boogie Cousins scored in double figures in both games. So, Dave, how dangerous can this combo of former Kentucky stars be for the Rockets, especially once James is back in the mix?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a positive that they have those two guys coming in that aren't just strangers to one another. They have that pre-existing relationship going back to even before they played at Kentucky together. And certainly they both are trying to, recollect that superstar status that they had not that long ago. But I don't, that to me creates an interesting dynamic because we've seen locker rooms with cliques. Like they have a natural rapport.
Yep.
And the guy who has owned that locker room and owned that franchise, who has his face plastered on the side of the Toyota Center for the last several years, is now the outsider in a way because he hasn't been there. You know, it's kind of what have you done for me lately in this league? And right now, they are the Rockets playing, and he is the outsider. So it's an interesting dynamic. I think basketball can work itself out sometimes if they have a couple good games together and he recognizes that, hey, maybe this is something that I shouldn't overlook. There's something here. At the same time, again, it's not Kyrie and Kevin Durant. It's not Joel Embiid and his old boss, Daryl Morey. And so I can see why he would be cold to jumping right into this new relationship.
Yeah, but I still see more talent than he's ever had on the team there right now. And I think, because if
ever?
Boogie... Yeah, I think so. When you look at the totality, Boogie Cousins, at a point in this league, was one of the best big, right? Hands down, he was 26 and 13 or whatever. I mean, he was putting up extreme numbers. John Wall was one of the top point guards in this league. And so when you add that to a James Harden, and I don't think Coach Silas is asking him to hand over the whole team and have to adjust his whole game in some kind of way. I think what he's going to show him is this is how these guys can really help you and take the load off of you. So when we get deeper into this thing, you got the legs and you got the trust built in that can get you over the hump later on. These two guys are really trying to rebrand themselves right now. I think it's a great opportunity for Wall and Boogie to reestablish themselves. And if it doesn't work out with James and they move him, they're going to get something good back to add to that team. So I think the Rockets can be a really good basketball team. I don't know how good, but they could end up being a solid basketball team in the West.
Well, it's no secret. These are two players who I particularly like watching play basketball. Ooh. I just like both of their games so much, and I hope that they can get back to those gentlemen that you were describing. We don't know if they're going to be that yet. And I wouldn't want to put that pressure on them, frankly, because we've seen with Gordon Hayward, Paul George, it takes a little while to come back from such a major injury. But yeah, if you're James Harden, I would hope you would get excited about this and this duo. Because here's the thing. If the Rockets do trade him, he does not get to say where he goes. Mm-hmm. James is their ticket to getting back some of their future if they are forced to deal him. They're going to make a trade to the best organization for them, for their deal. And so I hope he realizes what he has in these two right now and at least gives it a try. We will see. All right, guys, coming up, Talen Horton-Tucker opened the eyes of a lot of fans. A couple big games against the Clippers over the weekend. How much has the Lakers' depth improved from last season? Stick around. You're watching The Jump. I'm getting greedy. I blow the whole budget on
me. That's on me. I'm conceited. Here's a young kid that a lot of people don't know about, but you're going to know about him because he's going to start playing and getting minutes and seeing that he can really play on a championship caliber team. Holy mackerel, this kid is fantastic.
No, he's special, Mike.
Talen, what a night. 34 points on top of that great performance the other night. What does it feel like out there to be doing what you're doing against a team like the Clippers that is two of the best defenders in the league?
I'm just trying to come out here and, you know, play. Just do whatever I can, you know, to showcase and, you know, provide anything that the team needs. So I just feel like, you know, I came out here tonight and I was able to do it.
You got a lot of the elite guys in the NBA buzzing about you. Kawhi Leonard stopped Wes Matthews mid-game the other night to say, that kid, he's only 19. And, of course, had to be corrected. You had your birthday a couple weeks ago, Talen, so you are 20 now. How does it feel to be feeling out the NBA? Because you were great in the bubble, but you spent most of last season in the G League.
Yeah, it's just a great learning experience for me, you know, being up with the guys. And, you know, just I'm taking it every day at a time. I mean, one day at a time. And, you know, just trying to get better every day. I appreciate it.
Welcome back to The Jump. Fun talking to Talen last night. I am Rachel Nichols, joined by David Fizdale, Dave McMenamin. And boy, he was hot, scorching in the Lakers preseason win over the Clippers. Dave, you were in the building. Tell me a little bit about how much the Lakers' depth improved from last season when you add a guy like Talen into the mix.
Yeah, I mean, he was dominant. Now, I don't expect him to have nights like that every night as the season goes on because he's not going to get 41 minutes like he did. But you know, what he does is allow the Lakers to extend their championship contender status. If you get lucky on some of these young players and they pan out, you can work around the margins a little bit better because when you're spending so much money on the contracts of Anthony Davis and LeBron James, and then obviously they had to re-up Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and they traded for Dennis Schroeder and he's making a good chunk of change, you don't have much left to work with. And so to hit on a guy like Talen Horton-Tucker, who they purchased the second round draft pick from the Orlando Magic to be able to draft him in the middle of the second round a couple years ago. That's so huge. And he's kind of following the same mold that Alex Caruso did for them last year. He was a young player trying to find his way in the league, hungry, and they all fed off that energy. And come game six of the NBA Finals, Alex Caruso's starting. That may be a lofty goal for Talen Horton-Tucker, but certainly he's someone who seems to be ready to be able to contribute all season long.
Absolutely. I think this kid is starting to really gain his confidence. And if you look back at the bubble, Frank threw him in the Rockets series for two games, and he played great. So can you imagine what that did for that kid coming into this year saying, my coach believes in me, he's going to give me a chance to compete and play. And now this kid with no pressure on him, with all of these stars, gets injected into the mix. The rich keeps getting richer, right? And now he's around. He's also, this is great what he's doing, but think about who he's playing with now. LeBron makes everybody better. Schroeder is a playmaker. Marc Gasol, one of the best playmaking bigs in the league that can get people buckets. So here they have another big young guard that can defend multiple positions, that can push the pace, and that isn't an offensive liability. So I'm really happy for this kid. I love seeing these kind of stories, and he's going to contribute to their winning this year, I guarantee it.
He does just seem to also have just a maturity. I don't know if part of that was being with the team through the bubble. That was such an intense experience. Mm-hmm. And you have to remember, too, a big part of why he spent a chunk of last season in the G League was he had an injury that prevented him from being at Summer League.
Right.
So he just got such a slow start to things. I do want to know, though, now that his depth has improved, now that he's improved, now that the depth of the team overall has improved, Dave, how does that impact the team's plans to load manage LeBron and Anthony Davis?
I mean, LeBron has told me that he flat out does not believe in load management. He's told me over and over again, if I'm healthy, I'm playing. And certainly he would have to either come off that stance, change his mind about it, or be a hypocrite if he decides to all of a sudden load manage this year. So we'll see how that works out. The league, even though they still have rules in place where they want to see the stars playing in marquee games, they understand it's the shortest offseason in league history. And so there are some opportunities to rest your guys if you should need it. But, you know, there's a thing, and it's very low on the list of priorities for LeBron in terms of what he wants to accomplish. It's all about winning championships this stage of his career. But I don't think LeBron's just going to rest for the sake of resting, because there is that carrot on a stick where he could catch Kareem Abdul-Jabbar for all the all-time points list if he continues to play and play enough games while he's healthy. And so, you know, I've always known him to be a guy where, you know, if he's going to get out there and be a part of a regular season, play me. Don't sit me just for the sake of sitting me. And I don't think that's really going to change.
No, he's exactly right about LeBron James. There's no way he's getting low. You know what their low management is going to be this year? Remember Golden State a few years ago just beat the hell out of everybody in the first three quarters, and they would be up by 30, and then they never played in the fourth quarter? Mm-hmm. Welcome to low management for the Lakers. LeBron's not sitting out needing games. He's about to make history. What are we talking about?
Did you guys try to get him to sit in Miami on certain nights?
Never. That was a mute point. We was like, don't even come at me with that stuff. If a basketball game is being played, we had to beg them to sit out the last game of the first year we had them together in Toronto, because he was just like, nope. I'm not sitting out. There's a game being played. I'm playing. And so that's his attitude. He's like a pickup player. If there's somebody playing at the park, he's playing. And so I think that's the way they're going to manage his minutes, is just by being dominant. And because they have so many different weapons at so many different times, they will be able to sustain dominance throughout the season. Even if a guy goes down or a guy gets tweaked, they won't miss a beat because they're too deep damn near at every single position. So load management, my butt. He is going to play and play well.
Well, it's interesting a little bit into the dynamic on the court, though, because our colleague Brian Windhorst has talked about how LeBron perfected the art of load managing during games sometimes. And by the way, Kawhi Leonard did this, too, where wouldn't really maybe all the time getting back on defense, all of that stuff. But
right.
That changed last season, Fizz, right? He thought it was so important to set the tone for the rest of the team that last season you saw him play, especially defense, differently than he had in the previous three or four years.
Yes.
I don't know which LeBron we're going to get during the regular season this year, whether he feels like it is smarter to preserve himself for the playoffs or whether he needs to still be that tone setter all the time, no matter what.
That's just who he is. I just don't see him doing anything different. The way he ended this year, the last year, blocking everybody's shot, chasing people down, he's going to start the year this way. He's a heavyweight fighter that's used to fighting 15 rounds every fight. So he will not get tired. He's gone 9 out of 10 championship runs. He's going to know how to pace himself throughout the season so that he can hold the trophy at the end of the year.
Well, that is certainly the goal for that team once again. All right, Dave is going to take a quick segment off. He will be back later in the show. Coming up, though, we are going to talk a little Clippers chemistry. Are there issues behind them? Our Clippers reporter, Om Yongmasook, is going to join us to preview their season. Next on The Jump, keep it locked. Welcome back to The Jump. You know, we're just 8 days away from the start of the next NBA season, and you know what that means. The Jump's previously on segments are back. This is like when your favorite TV show returns from hiatus. We're catching you up on everything that happened since the last time you saw him. So now it is time for Previously On, the Los Angeles Clippers.
There's something going on here, and this is not simply the Clippers, you know, messing around. It's more than that. The Denver Nuggets are outplaying them.
The Clippers right now have no answers for the Nuggets. Clippers owner Steve Ballmer feeling like the Clipper fans right now.
There is no overstating about what we saw from the LA Clippers last night. Just an absolute, flat-out, catastrophic disaster. As the Clippers were busy descending into a giant sinkhole last night, Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum had a field day on Twitter.
The Clippers are going to break this up.
Clippers and Doc Rivers parted ways yesterday. The team said in a statement that Rivers and owner Steve Ballmer, quote, reached a mutual decision.
You know, Doc was trying to play me as like a Ray Allen or like a J.J. Redick, mm-hmm. all pin downs, all like, I can do it, but that ain't my game, right?
I can't tell what your answer is. It's just hard to see where you're going here.
Coaches are the fall guy, and sometimes it's not warranted.
Steve Ballmer decided we need a fresh start, and look,
That's a brave, bold move.
Paul George and the Clippers have agreed to add 4 years to his contract.
Last season didn't end. The playoffs didn't go the way they wanted them to go. And certainly there's a lot on Kawhi Leonard and Paul George with a new head coach in Ty Lue to get this figured out.
We are now thrilled to welcome in NBA reporter and my Maryland friend, Om Young Misook, to help us preview the Clippers' upcoming season. And we begin, guys, with the big cliffhanger, right? At the end of last season, when we last saw the Clippers, they gave up a 3-1 lead to the Nuggets in the Western Conference semis. In the aftermath of that, as noted there, chemistry problems, right? Doc Rivers gets fired this offseason. They hire Ty Lue. They lose Montrezl Harrell to the Lakers, pick up Serge Ibaka to reunite with Kawhi after their 2019 title run. Paul George also signed that big extension. So, Om, do the Clippers feel like their chemistry issues are behind them?
Oh, I mean, this is definitely still an issue for them that they are working on. Like, the Clippers should send bouquets to the Houston Rockets and Kyrie Irving for basically taking away from them as far as being the biggest drama in the NBA. Those two guys are making the Clippers look functional, okay? I kind of liken this, Rachel, to, like, I'm one of the few lucky people that just got a PlayStation 5, which is, like, impossible to get, okay, Rachel? And the thing is, like, once you get it into your cart and you've purchased it, that's only half the battle, because now you got to wait for it to actually come and get to you. And you hear all these horror stories of it being delivered in the actual PlayStation box and people jacking them, okay? And I'm getting to my point here, is that for the Clippers and their chemistry, yes, they made some changes with Doc Rivers and Ty Lue. Maybe an addition by subtraction by losing the sixth man of the year, Montrezl Harrell, and bring in Serge Ibaka, who has familiarity with Kawhi Leonard. But, like, until I got my PlayStation 5, until you see it and feel it in your hands, the Clippers don't have that chemistry yet. And that is something that they're going to have to work on. And there's going to be bumps along the way for sure, because they are learning a new system under Ty Lue. Yes, Ty Lue was there last year under Doc Rivers. But as Ty Lue said, this is a whole new system. They've got new players, new faces to bring in. And there's a lot of pressure on Kawhi and Paul. And if this doesn't work out, if they have another collapse, another unimaginable catastrophe in the postseason, guess what? Kawhi Leonard has a player option in his contract next summer. They locked up Paul George, but the Clippers are still going to be anxious until they see that chemistry together, because they want to keep Kawhi Leonard next summer as well.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that, you know, T. Lou and the staff, they deserve a fresh start, mm-hmm. right? Because he just deserves that, because he's a championship coach. He's gone through all of the stuff you need to go through, and he needs to be able to put his stamp on this team. The pressure absolutely lies on those two guys. I mean, look at the amount that the Clippers have invested in having those guys here. The number of picks. You know, I still always come back to that kid, Gilchrist Alexander. Yep. I love him, right? Danilo Gallinari was a part of that deal. And they just paid him a 4-year monster contract. So I just think that with that investment, those two guys have to take this team to another level. And I think what will be a big difference for them this year is, can Reggie Jackson play at a high level as a point guard and really fill that position that they need? Because that's the one place I think everyone has said the Clippers have needed to improve. So we'll see what Reggie can do in that position, and can he make other people better around him?
Yeah, that true floor general right. type role. I will just say to everyone, do not underestimate Serge Ibaka. He is such a breath of fresh air everywhere he goes. He has a really good relationship with Kawhi. They've done some fun stuff together. He's gotten Kawhi out of his comfort zone. So Serge can maybe be that bridge between Kawhi and the rest of the team that will lead to better chemistry. We will see.
Champion. Absolutely. Defender. Can shoot.
Absolutely. But not just on the court, but off the court. He is a guy you want yep. in your locker room. All right, here is what Clippers fans will need to binge watch in the first half of the season. The Clippers facing the Lakers on TNT's opening night, and they face the Nuggets on Christmas night. They also face the Warriors twice in early January, and they will see the Bucks on February 28th on ABC. So, which game would you say is bigger for the Clippers, opening night against the Lakers or Christmas night against the Nuggets?
I mean, look, if this was any other team, I would say maybe trying to exercise your demons from the playoffs after having a 3-1 collapse. But as Nikola Jokic said at the starting training camp, people are talking about the Clippers losing and not the Nuggets winning that mm-hmm. series. And the Clippers certainly feel that way. Throughout camp, all they've said is how they lost that series and they should have won that series. This is about the Lakers, this between these two games, because one, you get to measure yourselves up against the defending champions. Granted, we might not see a lot of LeBron and AD on opening night, but the Clippers are going to be in that arena watching them get their rings, potentially. And also, Montrezl Harrell, the other wrinkle that's in there, is on the other side now. And in the first game, Patrick Beverley and Montrezl Harrell are already talking smack to each other. They're going to take that up 100 levels on opening night. So it's definitely the Lakers over the Nuggets.
Totally, 100% agree with you, Om. It's just when you LA and you're playing in the same building.
And spoken like an LA native.
I just understand what it is, right?
And so this game, you don't think that
no way. They got
to
watch the Lakers get their rings and hang up another banner in the Staples Center. I remember in Miami when we had to sit in the locker room and watch Dallas do it.
Oh yeah.
I'm telling you, if you're not fuming in there and ready to go and come out with just a chip on your shoulder, we ended up, I know we were up 30 after three quarters.
Yeah, I remember that game.
I mean, those guys, I can't even tell you how they were in the back. LeBron and D-Wade, Chris, they were foaming at the mouth. And
right.
So if the Clippers aren't like that for this game, I don't know what will motivate you, because these guys are collecting the hardware that you are getting criticized about not being competitive for right in the same building as you.
All
and
right.
you got to hear it
that.
All the time, everywhere yeah. you go.
I'll give you that.
Right?
I'll give you that. I will say I watched those two teams played last night, and I know it was preseason, but there was no LeBron. There was no Anthony Davis. You did have Paul George and Kawhi out there, and I
right.
did not see the energy from the Clippers that Coach Ty Lue, to his credit, said he didn't see either.
Right.
Finally, it's spoiler alert time. Caesars William Hill giving the Clippers the second best odds of winning the Western Conference behind the Lakers, but in front of some really good teams. Fizz, what's your bold prediction for the Clippers this regular season? Where do you think they'll end up?
I still think they're going to be sitting in the third seed,
okay.
because I don't know what's the difference between this year and last year when it comes to load management.
Right.
Is there any difference? So I think those guys will still get rested, and they won't win enough games to win more than Denver and the Lakers. I think Denver is real, and we have to give them credit for who they are, and they're not going to load manage. Those young guys are playing.
Sure.
They're going to play all 72, and I think at the end of it, the Clippers will be in that third seed. But can they get more chemistry out of it this year? Can they get connected more offensively and defensively, where they're reading and reacting off of each other and playing hard for each other in a sacrificial way? That's what we didn't see last year. They were not giving it up for each other. And that's going to be the difference in a shortened season. Can they manage those minutes to, you know, and keep them healthy? But can they build chemistry and show a real connection between the locker room guys?
Look, as good as the Clippers were last year in the regular season, and then it all collapsed in the postseason, I actually think, and they were better on paper last year, but I think the Clippers are going to be better in the postseason.
Hmm.
And I think what you're going to see is that the Ty Lue addition, changing from Doc Rivers to Ty Lue, is going to be what they hope for strategically, and also helping with the chemistry. And I think Ibaka, just like you said, Rachel, we don't know how much he has left in the tank. But I think the ability to stretch the floor for them is going to be big for a stretch five. And also his ability to perhaps defend bigs like Nikola Jokic
yep.
and Anthony Davis in the postseason, where Montrezl Harrell struggled there. I think that is going to be a big addition for the Clippers in the playoffs. But we have to wait and see.
Well, I will listen to anything someone sitting in front of all those Jays has to say. I'm impressed with your background. I'm impressed with all the sneakers. I do want to point out that Om wore one of those to his wedding. That is how dedicated he is as a sneakerhead. Thank you so much, friend, for coming and joining us today. Come back soon. Everyone else, stick around, because here's what The Jump recommends for today. Tim Bontemps recapping our annual NBA offseason survey on the ESPN app. 4 of the 8 scouts and executives surveyed picked Luka for MVP this year. I know a couple of our analysts have picked him as well. Giannis got 1 vote. After the break, we discuss which player is the better bet. Dave McMenamin back in the house with us. All right, guys, our league pass game of the night tonight, a tough one to pick. 6 preseason games on the slate tonight. Pelicans Heat was tempting, but we're picking Mavs Bucks at 8 o'clock Eastern. Those two teams met on Saturday. Giannis scored 25 in 24 minutes. Luka scored 13 in 16 minutes. According to Caesars William Hill, Luka has the best odds of winning the MVP this upcoming season, right in front of Giannis, who of course won the last 2 seasons. Dave, you are a voter. Which player would you rather put your money on if you were in the prediction game?
I will say this. If Giannis ends up signing this extension, that will give some wind in the sails of the Milwaukee Bucks franchise, and I could see him potentially joining a very elite company in the NBA by getting a third straight MVP. But otherwise, I could also see there being kind of some atrophy in the regular season because it didn't work for them in the playoffs the last couple of years when they went for that number one record in the regular season. So I'm going with Luka.
Yeah, I think Giannis is definitely going to make this a difficult decision no matter what. But I just think Luka right now has the people around him that he needs and the system that he needs to just flourish. I mean, this guy's got so much spacing around him. He's got other guys that can take the weight off of him. And I'm gonna tell you, the reason I think Luka too is because of an important move they made. Josh Richardson. Remember that name this year. He is a big defensive-minded guard that can guard whoever is the best backcourt player. So that frees up Luka to just play all offense if he wants. Obviously, Luka's going to defend, but Josh can really take the pressure off of him of defending the toughest matchup, which now frees him up to just go do his thing. And he has no pressure on him, yep. Right? He's just playing free. He's having fun. And I just think he's going to have a huge year this year.
Well, he got that Christmas Day slot. I agree with you, Dave. The hill for Giannis to climb to be MVP this year, it's going to be a tougher climb than the previous 2 years. I don't love the expression voter fatigue. I don't think it's that people get tired of voting for someone. I just think that when you don't deliver in the postseason, even though it's a regular season award, people value those regular season accomplishments differently. They start feeling like they're inflated or they're not real in the same way. So it will be tougher for him this year. We will see, though. Giannis has certainly accomplished plenty in this league. Nothing he does would surprise me. All right, thanks to Coach.